Welcome to the Overcommitted Podcast, your weekly dose of real engineering conversations. I'm your host today, Erica, and I am joined by...
Hey, I'm Brittany Ellick.
We met while working on a team at GitHub and quickly realized we were obsessed with getting better at what we do. So we decided to start this podcast to share what we've learned. We'll be talking about everything from leveling up your technical skills to navigating your professional development, all with the goal of creating a community where engineers can learn and connect. Today, we are not just talking about securing users, we are talking about securing autonomous code that they control through AI agents. Specifically, as these agents move into our enterprise systems, we're asking the fundamental questions of who are you and what are you allowed to do? And these become huge challenges for our security stack. So to help us navigate this critical shift, we are bringing in an undisputed expert in identity and authentication, Dan Moore, who is the Senior Director of CIAM Strategy and Identity Standards at FusionAuth. We will be discussing what current identity protocols are being challenged by the rise of agents and what new standards are emerging to give autonomous coding agents a more secure, verifiable, and official identity. So, Dan, welcome to the show. Let's talk about this evolving landscape of identity. Feel free to introduce yourself. Say hi.
Sure. Yeah. Hey, thank you so much for having me, Brittany and Erica. I am thrilled to be here. And the short answer about who I am is I've just been in the developer world for about 25 years, played a lot of different roles. My current role, as you mentioned, is at FusionAuth. We're an authentication provider. We are really focused on customer authentication, but as you alluded to, a big part of that, at least in the last year or two, has been, well, what is agents. I know we're going to kind of dig into kind of what that is, but we are extremely interested in kind of helping people secure their systems for users as well as for agents.
Well, yeah, you teed it up perfectly. Let's start there. When we talk about AI agents, what exactly are we talking about? Is it just a fancy name for a piece of software, or is it something different? And do we even have a definition?
Yeah, I think it's a great question because I think the honest truth is that there are definitely people out there using AI agents to accomplish tasks, to get stuff done, especially in the coding realm, but also outside of the coding realm. But I think that we're still kind of groping our way towards an actual real definition of something. But the way I think about it, and this came up in a conversation the other day, is it's really like a workflow or a set of pieces of software that can like accomplish workflows, which we've had for decades, right? Workflow software has been around for a long time. The difference is that the workflow used to be defined in code or in static configuration, and now it's more in natural language. And so the idea you can actually kind of give an agent a task in relatively natural language and have it, not to overuse the word grope, but grope towards accomplishing it, which is what they do, is to some extent a game changer.
Well, so yeah, when this piece of code does start making decisions on its own, how does that change some of these security risks that we face? And what are the biggest things that we need to worry about when it's an agent authenticating or authorizing versus a human?
Sure. And I will say it is worth taking a step back and saying the security problems that these new agents create are similar. Boy, maybe they're a little bit different in scope, but like they're similar to the security problems that we have right now, right? Because there's plenty of security holes that humans drive through that agents are going to also be able to kind of attack or exploit, you know. I guess I just want to say before people get all concerned about securing AI agents, they should be like, hey, what are we doing to follow all the rules and all the things that we should do to secure, you know, stuff? Anyway, so set that aside. The way I think about it is that human beings are slow and non-deterministic, and software as written, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, even the vast majority of software right now is fast and relatively deterministic, right? Charity majors might have some issues about that, how deterministic it is, but it's pretty deterministic and easy to reason about. Whereas agents kind of fall in this middle ground, and so they are fast and non-deterministic. So there's this great thing called the lethal trifecta, which Simon Willison, who's written a ton about AI and LLMs in general, talks about. And the idea is that agents have access to private data, which again, software does too. It's exposure to untrusted content, which again, software does too. And then there's the ability to externally communicate. And so the issue is that because agents are non-deterministic and because they read that untrusted content, they can then be instructed to access your private data and then send it off in an email. And this is a real, I mean, I would consider this to be a new threat because of the ability to follow like arbitrary instructions, right? Like if a piece of code got an arbitrary instruction it didn't understand, I should be careful here. There are ways to craft it, but it's a much higher bar to like make a deterministic piece of software do stuff it's not supposed to do. Whereas with agents, they found over and over again, it's relatively easy to do that. Those are kind of the bigger changes that I see coming down the pike is how can we address this? I mean, the non-determinism is the joy and the pain of agents, right? Like the fact that we can like give it something and, as I mentioned earlier, it can kind of maneuver way its way towards achieving a goal is a huge win. But that also means that other people who can communicate with it can do the same thing and kind of bend the agent away from the goal that we set it.
And non-deterministic in this case, meaning, can you like sort of define that with
sure.
What you mean there?
Yeah, that's a great, I work in the auth space and like using jargon is something that like I try not to do because it's so easy to kind of get over your skis and assume kind of everyone knows what you know, but that's a great call out. So non-deterministic in my mind means that, or sorry, let's start with deterministic. Deterministic is you give the same inputs and you get the same output. So math is a perfect example of the deterministic system. Gravity to some extent is too, right? Whereas non-deterministic means you give it the same inputs and you won't necessarily get the same outputs. Weather, human society, conversations with your partner, like these are all things that are non-deterministic because they're affected by the current state of things. And so if you've ever asked the same question of an LLM, you're going to get back slight. I mean, here's the thing, like they're slightly different, right? Or they could be kind of massively different depending on the way that, well, I should be careful here because I'm definitely not an LLM like creation expert. So, but at the end of the day, it's not a system where you put in the same thing and you get the same thing out.
Makes sense. So you're saying that creates scenarios where it's unpredictable how they might act in different scenarios.
Especially with untrusted input, right? Like that's where it gets really kind of scary. And the honest truth is, unfortunately, we think about untrusted input as something an attacker provides, but it could also be we make a mistake, right? Like we fat finger something or we aren't as clear in our intent as we want to be. And that's all input that like you aren't sure how things are going to go. And that's a new kind of security threat model.
And yeah, there's different boundaries where this can be dangerous. Like within your own system is one thing. And then sort of like crossing system boundaries too. There's the question of like how much context, how much data gets like carried across from one system to another. And you're talking about like privacy, like, you know, how do I authorize this context versus something else?
Yeah, I think actually that points to one of the solutions to this is that you start to have these kind of sub agents that, you know, may have access. Like, I mean, one way to deal with that lethal trifecta I mentioned is that like you have different agents that have access to different sets of tools or different sets of data. And if you have one that can read your email and another that can send your email, it's going to be really hard for an attacker to be able to kind of get that email, you know, that private data sent off because you have to like basically now attack two different LLMs. So kind of more separation of concerns, which again, this is not software, it's not revolutionary, right? It's a lot of the same principles. We're just having to apply it in new context, right? Separation of concerns is a great thing for security.
Right. Yeah, going back to your point where the best practices for human authorization is the same idea for like agentic authorization. Like, you don't want to give a human the keys to everything across all system boundaries. We try to enforce data protection and data privacy and minimum required access controls. Same rules apply for agentic identities as well.
Yep.
This is very fascinating. I don't personally work on the identity side at all. So I'm just a software engineer and I just want to know, like, what do I need to do to keep these things working and not exposing anybody to problems? But I'm curious, I do work on the enterprise side, and I'm curious what you're seeing right now in terms of enterprise adoption of agents. Are there any like specific business or administrative problems associated with, you know, that companies are experiencing or butting up against when they want to use agents?
Sure. I mean, I guess I would say that, like, first of all, it feels like there's a ton of people that are experimenting with this stuff. And I think there's definitely a feeling that there's a there. I think that I've not seen some really large public, like, case studies where people are, like, successful with this. And I don't know whether that's because it's harder to be successful with or because the people who are successful are keeping their lips shut because it's like a big competitive advantage. You know, you definitely hear about people doing this around coding. I definitely have interviewed people that are doing spec-driven development and finding that to be very successful is kind of a one-person show, which obviously is kind of the opposite of an enterprise, which actually speaks to, I think, one of the complexities is I feel like when you're doing greenfield development, agents are an amazing productivity boost. Whereas when you're doing brownfield development or improving existing software, suddenly there's a whole lot more context that needs to be available to the agent for it to make intelligent suggestions. And it's less fun, right? Or maybe it's less, that's the wrong word. Fun is something that human beings think about greenfield development. It's less capable, might be a good way to put it. But I think that around your specific question on enterprises, anything that is doing text evaluation, we talked to somebody recently who is doing like extraction of form fields, and, you know, a lot of document management stuff. I think AI is a good fit for, you know, as far as kind of pure agent stuff. Like the honest truth is, I feel like there's a lot more smoke than there is fire right now. There's a lot of people who are like building out all these agent systems, and then you ask them like, hey, I shouldn't say a lot of people. I'm familiar with a couple of people who've built out some agentic systems, and you're like, this is cool. Like, who's using this? And they're like, well, I am to build other products. And you're like, that's great, right? And that is a definitely use case, but it's not like the enterprises are like pulling people in and like saying, hey, we need to do this. Now, one thing I have heard is that having a natural language interface of an LLM into data and into documentation is very powerful for improving the knowledge worker experience. But I don't know if I would call those agents, right? That's like more just like a more natural language interface.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are there any like standards or is like the industry approaching any sort of way to make sure that these are actually secure? I mean, I feel like you said that there's a lot of people doing this yet, but there's lots of like concepts of plans towards doing it. I'm curious, this like, is there anything that the industry as a whole is saying, like, okay, this is a way that we can trust securing agents?
Sure. So you actually kind of asked two different questions, which are there standards and are we converging? I think that like there are 100% standards. I just went to the IETF meeting in Montreal and there was, I think AI was mentioned in every single meeting I went to. And I went to most of the web stuff, right? I didn't go to like the telephony stuff, but like there was an agent draft mentioned there, I think in every single meeting I went to, but I think that it's all still early days. And so they're trying to solve, in some cases, they're trying to like think of agent identity as a workload identity, right? So there's the Whimsy group. There's a draft from Aaron Parecki, who's an Okta guy, who's talking about cross trust boundary authentication. I feel like there's two kind of main ways that agents communicate. There's the agent-to-agent protocol, which basically has a lot of different, it's kind of a pick your flavor kind of protocol when it comes to identity. And then there's MCP, which is Model Context Protocol. And that seems to have been kind of standardized on OAuth for the majority of kind of enterprise use cases. So there's a lot of activity in the OAuth working group around some of the kind of follow-on standards around that, like how to make it easier for MCP clients, which essentially are like IDs or other kind of AI agents, to register with an authorization server, and then like what goes in the token. But to me, a lot of this comes back down to what we talked about earlier, which is doing stuff that we know is good practice, which is like principal least privilege. It's sophisticated authorization schemes, maybe past RBAC, right? Once you get a certain size, like REBAC or ABAC or PBAC. And the nice thing about implementing those is that helps you whether you're implementing for agents or you're implementing for users at scale. And I still think that those are underappreciated and underimplemented, but maybe AI agents will be a catalyst for kind of pushing more people to handle that.
Yeah, it kind of seems like the average developer needs to know a little bit more about security and auth than they ever really needed to before, at least right now, until there's like, you know, an idea around like the right way to do this, because people are still trying to figure it out. What would you recommend?
Actually, can I ask you real quick? I mean, so when you say that, like, do you mean because they're using AI agents and so they need to have some consciousness about that, or because they're building software that will be used by an AI agent, or why do you think now is the time for, because I mean, security people have been like, developers need to know about security for, you know, shift left and like, you know, for a long time. So why is it more important now, in your opinion?
Sense. I think that there's like more out of the box options for regular auth than there is for AI agents, where like I would never do it. I would never roll my own and figure out how to do this for like any website that I create. But if I'm creating some sort of an AI agent, like it doesn't sound like there's like a thing that exists yet that I can say like, okay, this is going to cover a lot of the security concerns.
I mean, that makes sense. And I mean, I think some of that's because it's early days, and some of it's because the protocols are still being like hammered out, right? Like, the MCP spec, there's a new release coming in 11 days, and it's going to have some shifts even in how you do kind of OAuth for MCP clients. And that's like, you know, it's only been out for a year, and there's already been like multiple different ways to do stuff. So that makes sense. Thank you.
I think also like an awareness that this standardization is like still forming is also important, because I mean, I guess there's like the whole legal side of things where like that isn't even figured out yet necessarily, of like if I direct an agent towards a certain goal and it takes nefarious actions to get there, am I responsible? And like, I don't know, as a, like we're mentioning like what, you know, the risks are as a developer, like why you might need to know, like, you know, as a developer, knowing like, hey, somebody potentially like promises me this agentic workflow that's going to like solve all my problems. Like, okay, well, like, you know, both eyes open, like look at what it's actually doing, like understand that, you know, this like identity and authorization piece might not necessarily be a completely solved problem yet. So like if somebody's promising you like, you know, all the guardrails are there and like, don't worry about it, like maybe question that, maybe look at it twice before you like, again, like kind of authorize it to do something that you wouldn't want to be responsible for.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like there is a little bit of Wild West feel to a large chunk of this, you know, right now. And just like, I think, man, I'm trying to think of like an analogous situation. I honestly, it probably is a little bit like the early internet, right? When people weren't sure, like, what to do about credit cards, or could you even pay with something over the internet with a credit card? And developers, to Brittany's point, need to be a lot more like cognizant of that kind of stuff. Now it's a lot more accepted, so there's, you know, you don't even think about that kind of thing. But we're back in the early days, which is exciting and scary and spooky all at the same time.
I feel like I'm hearing that that crossover and overlap a lot in a lot of different spaces right now. Like everybody's like, this feels like the dot-com bubble, you know, not just in terms of what's coming out, but like economically and like, you know, just the vibes that we're getting. And it's going to be interesting because I think, you know, obviously we're still using the internet, even though it, at the time, I would imagine it probably felt like we were, you know, not going to for a while. So
yeah, I think people always knew that it was going to be big. I don't think people like knew exactly how in depth it would get into our lives, but I don't think anyone after even like 2002, when it was like the depths of the nuclear winter, people weren't like, I'm never gonna use the internet again. It was just too easy to do things. So you know, and I think that is exactly analogous here, is like, there's no doubt in my mind in 5 years from now, we'll be using Gen AI in some form, right? Like what it actually looks like, I don't know. What's the Google Maps of Gen AI? You all are too young to remember Google Maps, but it was amazing when it came out. You're like, oh my God, I can scroll around, and like, and it blew my mind. And it's not, it came out of Ajax and came out of the early internet, but like, it was not something that like people had to invent it. So like, what are the things that people are going to invent with AI? Sorry, we're kind of far afield from authorization and identity, but you know, I don't want to be like an old man shaking my fist on the lawn, but I feel like we are going to have those kind of moments again in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. So before we go back to the authorization space, though, I'm curious, you having had the experience of living through that time, is there anything that you're telling developers right now, like things to do for their career to like, you know, bubble prevent themselves or anything like that? To like, is this, I mean, obviously these Gen AI skills aren't going to be completely useless, because like you said, we're probably still going to be using it. I'm not going back to the time where I had to write tests myself. Like that's just not happening. So I feel like there's still going to be something that's around. So are these skills still worth investing in your opinion?
AI skills or what skills I'd recommend?
AI skills, AI development, you know, like building these AI agents, is it worth, you know, you think these are still going to be around?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about AI agents to tell you that, right? I think that like, whenever there's a new tech coming on, and this happened with mobile, it happened with cloud, it happened with, you know, the internet itself, happened with like React, like there's like two paths, right? You can either be kind of at the forefront surfing that and like making the investment in time and energy to kind of be that local, I mean, an expert of some kind, right? You can be local to your company, you can be like in your community, you could be like worldwide, like, but like staking a claim to that. And I've seen people create great careers doing that. Then there's the people who are like, actually, I'm going to be a follower and I'm going to wait for things to shake out, which is a little, it's a different kind of risk, right? Because it's possible that you could miss something that is good, and you won't be able to like stake your claim as widely, right? If you're the 1,000th React developer, you're not going to be as known as the 2nd React developer, but you also miss on things, right? Like, so you might miss Ember.js or Meteor, right? Which were big, big, you know, front-end frameworks for a little while. And then now I think they're still used, but like they're definitely not winners. And so if you're a world-class expert in Ember, your options are a lot smaller and you've invested a lot of time and effort than if you're a world-class expert in React. The one thing I would say, and I, you know, if someone came up to me and said, hey, how can I avoid getting smacked around by this bubble? It's like, be close to the business, understand how to solve problems, be a collaborator, and you know, and be aware of these technologies. I don't think you need to be an expert in them, but I think you need to be aware. I mean, listen to podcasts like this one, right? And like, be aware of the, be aware of this kind of stuff, so that when it gets to the point where you're not blindsided, but being close to the business. And like, I mean, I honestly think that there will be an idea of a developer 15 years from now, because taking people's wants and desires and determining what's real and what they will pay for and how it fits into complicated techno-social systems like software, like big software projects, that is not a normal skill. And that is a skill that like, I think developers are well suited to like offer. Not programmers. You notice I didn't use the term programmer. I said developers in my mind.
Thanks for the plug for this podcast. Appreciate it. Extra boost. Let's go back to authorization and dig a little bit more into technical details. So when an agent needs to open a file or an internal tool, in your mind, how is the best way for it to prove that it has permission? Is it sort of giving a machine a broad security pass, or do we think that the system needs to evolve to adapt to having a more native agent ability within the system to have specific granular permissions?
I mean, I think that granular permissions are the way to go for sure. Like, and if you, you know, I think that the two paths you can lay out are like API keys and OAuth tokens, right? Or access tokens. And I feel like to some extent, we talked about echoes of the past, like this whole AI making like software, like calling other software services feels a lot like the API landscape of like the 2010s. And we've been through that. And I'm not saying OAuth is perfect. I'm not saying bearer tokens are perfect, but there's like a lot of infrastructure around it. And it's kind of a well-known protocol. And so I think that OAuth tokens properly constrained with scopes and probably fine-grained access behind that, reback, RBAC, PBAC, we talked about that a little bit, is probably the path forward. I'll also say that's in kind of production context. I think there's the, this idea of like non-prod context of like your own laptop where you can YOLO things a lot more. And I definitely have read, this was probably 6 months ago, where someone was just like, I just gave Claude total access to my computer and it can do whatever it wants. And everything's under Git control, right? You know, and pushed remotely. So if it totally blows things up, I don't care because I just kind of fall back and then I can just type whatever I want and Claude can run wild. And I would never do that in production, but in non-prod, it seems like it's a good way to build an intuitive sense for like how this piece of software, you know, interacts with the environment it's in.
Makes sense. For FusionAuth specifically, how are you focused on identity right now? And what are you planning in this new wave of non-human users?
Yeah. And I would say, first of all, that as we kind of mentioned earlier, like there's a ton of still like web apps that are like, you know, Brittany, you said that like, you know how to like put auth, user auth into a normal app. And I totally agree that a lot of folks do, but there's a ton of folks, and I've been at conferences where they're like, yeah, we still maintain our own auth system or we rolled our own. So there's a lot of hay to be made just from that perspective, right? But we are an OAuth system. Support some of the grants that I would expect agents to use. I've been playing with AWS Agent Core, which is a agent building framework that AWS is going to be, they just went in GA and they're going to be talking about a lot at reInvent. I've been playing around with that, and that's all using kind of client credentials grant for OAuth or the authorization code grant. And those are kind of, client credentials is good for when you have agents talking to each other, kind of that are independent. And then the authorization code grant is great when it's Dan who wants to give delegate access to an agent to go update his Google Calendar or, you know, interact with this other service as, you know, on behalf of Dan. So the delegation scenario. So I think that I don't see right now any reason from the identity and authorization space to kind of reinvent the wheel. It feels like we should push OAuth. And I mentioned it was being brought up in the IETF, like there's definitely extensions coming that are talking more about that aspect of it. But I think that there's no, from what I can see, there's no reason to kind of throw the entire thing out and kind of start from the beginning again, because we have these building blocks that work for software and work for humans right now. And as I mentioned, agents are kind of a mix. And so I think we can continue to push the OAuth specifications forward and solve these problems.
I'm going to take some homework and learn more about the OAuth spec. I'm now very interested in more about how that's implemented.
Yeah. Yeah. Please, I can send you some articles if you want, because I think there's definitely some good content out there that's talking about this in the general sense and also in the context of just agents.
Yeah, that'd be great. And we can share them out in the show notes too.
Awesome.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation, and we always end with a fun segment. And today's fun segment is inspired by this topic of agents. And you mentioned sub-agents at the beginning. And for anyone who hasn't worked with a sub-agent, a lot of them are defined with this like specification file, which is basically text that tells them you are, I mean, any agent, you kind of tell it, this is what you are, this is what you're good at, and sort of like super boosting their powers. So I thought it would be fun to think about if we were agents, what spec files we would write for ourselves to super boost our abilities. So I can go first. I would do something around communication and like writing, because I always think that's a really hard piece. And I think specifically like asking myself follow-on questions and like understanding what other people would ask or like what other people might think about. So, you know, my spec file might be something along the lines of like generating different perspectives and having like helpful sort of like discussions, you know, sort of like a set of rubber ducks that all have different identities and can like ask me different questions to make sure I'm thinking through something fully. So that would be my superpower spec file. Brittany, do you want to go next?
This is like an incredibly introspective question masquerading as something that is not. I love this. I think that if I were to have like a spec file or at least like a desired trait, basically, that I would write, it would be that I'm really good at like following up with people and like keeping in touch with people. I feel like that's a skill that I'm not super good at and would like to get better at. So I'd be an expert in friendship or something like that. Really good at, you know, keeping up with the folks that I already know and like building those stronger ties. Dan, do you want to go next?
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. I feel like we could have an entire podcast about this question. One thing that this is kind of off topic, but like, it almost sounds like a spec file or a skills file is like a mantra for the agent in something that like repeats to itself and like becomes better at. So I'm like, oh, is that like mean the reverse is true for us? Like, mine would be my entire life. I've been my entire adult life, beliefs has been driven by my desire and lack of fear and willingness to ask good questions. And importantly, I think listen to the answers. And as I've gotten older, I think I have a little more nuance about when the right time to ask the questions is. So I'd kind of add that in too. But I also would say that I think each of these spec files comes with a license, and mine is going to be GPL license so that it infects other people with the same skill to like ask good questions and listen to the answers.
Well, thank you both for going with me on that journey of introspection. I know it was a little meta. Feels fun to think about. Well, thank you again, Dan, for joining us. If people want to find you, where can they look you up?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn, MoreDS, MoreDS, or Dan Moore Boulder will pop me up, or Blue Sky is the other place that I hang out and talk a lot. And that's moreds.com is my profile name. And then if you want to learn more about Fusionauth, or I also write on the blog there a lot, it's fusionauth.io. And would love to connect with anybody on social. You know, people always say this, but I'm happy to hear from anybody who has discovered me or my thoughts through the Overcommitted podcast. Be happy to connect.
Well, thank you, listeners, so much for tuning in to Overcommitted. If you like what you hear, please do follow, subscribe, or do whatever it is you like to do on the podcast app of your choice. Check us out on Blue Sky and share with your friends. Until next time, goodbye.